Support for the Capital Connection comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. With us this week, John Caney, Executive Director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany, a nonprofit, nonpartisan, tax-exempt charitable organization that promotes open, accountable New York State government with an interest in government transparency and public participation. You can find out more at reinventalbany.org. John, so great to have you back on the Capital Connection.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, John, I want to begin with a story that I read about in Spectrum News, and it was about New York State Senator, Senate Judiciary Chair Luis Sepulveda, who has not been showing up, according to allegations, in court for some of his clients that he's representing in his other position as an attorney. Spectrum News reached out to you, and you were quoted as saying, "This never should have happened." Remind us about the case and why you said that.
Sure. Senator Sepulveda is the chair of the Judiciary Committee of the State Senate, which is a powerful post, and in particular because it allows him to apply pressure and oversee the state's court system more than other senators. And as a practicing lawyer who appears before judges, Sepulveda has far more influence than other lawyers appearing before the judge. And this became an issue when he was accused and actually more than accused. I think there were a substantial number of witnesses who witnessed him browbeating a judge who quit and because of the pressure from the senator. And then this was exposed in the press and became a scandal. And the judge miraculously unquit and went back on the bench in New York City Housing Court. So our, very simple comment on it from Reinvent Albany was the chair of the Judiciary Committee should not be a practicing attorney and be in a position where they could apply undue influence on judges because of their being the chair of that committee, and seemed like a pretty simple one to us.
Yeah, it does seem simple, doesn't it, John? But as you well know, it doesn't often work the way you'd think it should in Albany. And the idea that we have a part-time legislature is part of that, isn't it?
So I have not heard an argument that we have a part-time legislature anymore, because unlike any other state, our legislators get paid a full-time salary. And that's something that Reinvent Albany has supported in return for legislators accepting curbs on their outside employment. And so there's been a substantial reduction in the amount of outside income that legislators can take, but they're still allowed to earn more than members of Congress can from outside employment. And essentially, the legislature has delayed and resisted a law that reduces their outside income. And so the Sepulveda issue is related to that, but it also is one of a simple conflict of interest, and it should apply both to the chair of the Judiciary Committee and to all chairs of all committees that have any kind of ability to influence in a disproportionate way some part of the economy or business or a government official or anything because of their position in government. And it's just a straight up conflict of interest issue.
Yeah, John, I'd take it a step further. I'd say all of them can't have outside interest, can't have part-time income. I don't think that's the way to do it. I think that's wrong. They're going to get influenced one way or the other. Half of them come into the legislature because they're going to do their tour of service, so then they become the cash cow for their law firm.
Yep. I mean, we would agree with you there. You know, it's been one compromise after another towards that goal. And Speaker Hastie has been particularly hostile to the idea of ending all outside employment, in part because he gets some outside income as an adjunct professor at a college in the Bronx. So he doesn't want to give that up. But I think New York eventually, if, you know, the Republic continues to exist and the state of New York continue to exist, will get there and ban outside income.
We're talking with John Caney, executive director of Reinvent Albany. You know, John, the budget, of course, is late, and we've been talking about this issue of executive power for a while now, and you've often stated to me and others that the governor is benefiting from this, especially when it comes to budget negotiations and bargaining, you know, without lawmakers. Lawmakers seem to be in some ways beholden to the governor in this process.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one way to think about it is that the budget is home court for the governor, and the governor has all the home court or home field advantage, depending on your sport, and wants to negotiate as much policy as possible in the budget, and the legislature doesn't. The problem here is that the legislative leaders actually benefit from having a three-person in a room governor budget dominated process, because they have access to information and they are able to control the story, the narrative, and the decision making and the negotiation much more than they can during the regular legislative session, when you have bill sponsors who know what's going on and have a say in the negotiation, the discussion over their bills. So in the budget, the governor and the leaders and their staffs are often the only ones that know really what's going on. And the members of the Senate and the Assembly depend on their leaders telling them. So that's a lot of powers for the leadership.
Right. When you look at this recent battle on the climate law, you know, this climate law that had these really tough goals that the governor says were hard to reach, impossible to reach. We need to change the law, or we're in trouble, to, you know, extend those deadlines and change some of it so that we can have a fighting chance at it. And yet, you know, as part of that, she has her agency, NYSERDA, her authority, I should say. They release a memo saying, you know, if you do this, it's going to raise everybody's bills by up to $3,000 a year. And so you can see the governor really using her power to hit the legislature over the head and say, you've got to change the law.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the governor has been very, very effective at bringing more and more of the business of Albany into the budget process, where she is strongest, and Carl Hastie has been right to criticize the fact that so much policy is being done in the budget. The problem is that the legislative leaders have basically gone along with it. And the legislature over the years has essentially ceded a lot of their power to the governor. And what we have now in New York State is a wild imbalance, where the governor is not a co-equal leader of the state, but the leader. And as Andrew Cuomo famously said, "I am the state." Echoing Louis XIV.
Yeah.
But he didn't get his head chopped off for that. But anyway,
he did for something else, but we'll move on.
That's it. But we can make a bad joke, but we won't go there. But anyway,
nope.
I think there's a bit of crocodile tears or whatever you want to say with the legislative leaders saying, oh, you know, the governor's trying to ram all of this policy through the budget. They're right about that part, but pretending that they're just victims that have no power. And that's complete nonsense. And some of this is because, every statewide official and both houses of the legislature are controlled by Democrats, and they don't want to go to war with another Democrat, the governor, and especially now where you have a tremendous degree of polarization nationally.
Absolutely.
And so it's undue deference to the governor, though, by the leaders. And until the rank and file Democrats force a change and are forced to force that change by their constituents, by the public, by public frustration, it's going to stay this way. And New York will continue to have this imperial governor system where not only does the governor completely dominate the budget process, but the governor also controls, vast parts of government that the legislature doesn't have much say over, mainly the public authorities, which issue most of the state's debt and provide a lot of the services. So, we're talking about the MTA and the Dormitory Authority and
sure.
the Power Authority and the Thruway Authority, et cetera, which are completely controlled by the governor.
Yeah, and to me, it's an example of, we'll just take Assembly Speaker Heastie for a second, his constituency, which I'm sure would support the climate law and a lot of other liberal and progressive policies. And yet, because of the way it works, this negotiation with the governor, he's often not reflecting what his own constituents may want.
Well, I think that the most fundamental problem here is we don't know because, again, three people in a room is not live streamed. So
right.
we don't really know what they're battling over and how much of this public presentation is scripted and kind of political kabuki theater. I'll be the bad cop on this.
Right.
And you be the bad cop on this other thing. We don't know. And that makes it very, very hard and near impossible to hold the legislative leaders accountable. And so that it just absolutely does not work for the broader public because nobody knows what's going on and really disempowers everyone but the leaders. So New York has a system of non-democracy in which the backbenchers in the Senate and the Assembly, more so in the Assembly, which is very leadership dominated because of the nature of how the offices are structured, et cetera. The backbenchers in the Assembly in the Democratic Party have very, very little power. And we're not even talking about the 30% of New Yorkers who are registered Republicans because Republican legislators have zero power.
Yep.
Far less than, say, the Democrats in Congress do, in part because there's nothing in New York that is akin to what Congress has with a discharge petition, which means an issue can be forced to the floor for a vote, regardless of the leaders, if a certain number of legislators sign it in Congress, and which has happened under Trump, where you've had all the Democrats and then some Republicans getting together to force a vote on things. New York does not have that. If it did, it would significantly change how things work because there are many issues where Democrats and Republicans agree and want to vote on things, but they don't come to the floor because the leaders don't let them.
And to me, the impact goes against your interests at Reinvent Albany, John Caney, in government transparency and public participation. If they're not transparent, if we can't get at their motives, if they're doing this kabuki theater, people get turned off, and they have been turned off to politics, and then they don't participate because they say it's rigged.
Well, that's right. And in part, they're right. It is rigged. I mean, the system in New York, state in particular, which has very high contribution limits still, has no transparency whatsoever during the budget process and this prolonged negotiation over these key issues. It is dominated by highly organized, highly funded special interest groups, whether they're business interests weighing in on the packaging debate. So it's one of the issues being negotiated behind closed doors, or Uber versus the trial lawyers when it comes to the auto insurance.
You'd think that packaging environmental legislation would be a no-brainer with Democrats all in control, right? Wouldn't you?
You would think so. That business interests have strongly opposed it, and I think that issue, like so many in Albany, and I mentioned auto insurance, is hampered by the fact that there's so little actual data being debated. So it's not like an informed discussion on, you know, in a, you know, Hollywood style movie where you have people making informed speeches on the floor. You know, here's, right. You know, here are the facts. No, here are the facts. And then let's argue over that. It's not happening. So, you know, in particular, issues that we've been very disappointed with the way they've been presented is the big changes to auto insurance, and in which the governor, who's been the champion of the changes, has presented zero, as in zero data or breakdowns on exactly who is getting the crashes, the payouts, you know, and there is extensive and very specific information about all this stuff because of the insurance companies that can break it all out. And that's not being presented to the public at all. And instead we get sweeping claims that it's going to save a lot of money. And then on the other side from the trial lawyers that it's going to be apocalyptically bad. And so for us, you know, what we want is fact-based debate and transparency. And, you know, people can look at facts in different ways and have approach them with different ideologies, value systems, priorities, and that's fine. But let's see some facts. And issue after issue is discussed completely behind closed doors and with very little public discussion about the facts. And it's not that hard. I don't think it's a fantasy to ask that the state do things like have roundtables and public hearings and bring in experts from both sides to have quasi debates. And I would point to, since we were heavily involved in the process by which public campaign finance was adopted by New York State, for that, there were many, many expert roundtables where, you know, scholars and from think tanks and academia were brought in, and these were open to the public, and you could hear what the expert types had to say. And there were also three gigantic all-day public hearings in which the Public Campaign Finance Board, the advisory group created by the legislature, talked on stage. They debated on stage the commission, and you got to hear it. And there were big audiences, hundreds of people, and then people got to testify. It was fascinating and exhausting, and the days were 14 hours long, and they did three of them. So this is possible. Even New York does these things sometimes, and it did in the case of the public campaign finance. So we know it's possible. We've seen it happen here, but it's not something that you know, either the trial lawyers or Uber want to do, and therefore the public doesn't get to hear a full presentation of the facts, and nor do the legislators who vote on it.
We're speaking with John Caney. He is the executive director, co-founder of Reinvent Albany. You can find out more at reinventalbany.org. John, we're running out of time. I want to go a little bit faster now and get some questions in because there's so much
sure.
I want to talk to you about. But it seems to me it's going to get worse because of what's happening right now with redistricting across the country. Now we hear the governor's in favor of it. This is not redistricting by the old rules. This is the new. Let's go point for point against the Republicans and redistrict states so only we can win. I mean, I am so angered by all of this, but I wonder what you're thinking about it, because I don't like this at all.
Well, it is a race to the bottom. I mean, we last year analogized it to the military commander in Vietnam who you know, famously said we had to destroy the village to save it. And when the village is democracy and you're talking about, 100% partisan redistricting in the name of saving the republic from, you know, Florida and Texas redistricting, then it gets very hard because you're making big arguments about saving everything. We're going to be issuing a position next week that's going to say, basically, keep the independent commission, make it more independent, and have a whole bunch of specific recommendations about the criteria that you use to redistrict. So I'm sure it'll be unsatisfying to the Democrats, and we'll basically be opposing the Democratic Party proposal to go with massive partisan redistricting. But that's the way it is.
It is. The Supreme Court's not going to give you any hope because of their decision, obviously, but the politicization of what once were considered lofty decision-making from the Justice Department to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, the total destruction of norms, the destruction of the federal government's, oversight role over the environment, the Justice Department's role, especially through the local U.S. Attorney's offices, in particular the Southern District and the Eastern District in New York City, which have done a lot of statewide anti-corruption work. It has just really, really hurt New York tremendously. I mean, not just in the pocketbook, which it has, but also in terms of the fact that you don't have a federal sheriff that is helping to maintain some standards of, clean government. You have this race at the bottom with redistricting. The list just goes on and on and on. You have, we call it the Trump effect. The fact that the legislative leaders are less likely to challenge the governor's imperial rule is in part because they don't want to have internal party bickering in the face of this massive MAGA threat to the system that they support.
Well, we got about a minute and a half, John. I wonder if you could just talk a little more about we talk about lobbyists who come to lobby on bills, and we know the ones that have the cash for the campaigns hold the most sway. And we've even heard in Washington that they write the bills for some of the lawmakers, but you want them to report their positions on bills, and other states do this, but not New York.
That's right. We want a really simple lobbying disclosure, which just says when a lobbyist is hired by a client to lobby on a bill, to that they have to say, are they supporting the bill, or are they opposing it, or are they just watching it? And we think that that's a pretty reasonable request. And amazingly, it's getting pushback. And in part because that kind of simple transparency makes it easier for the press and the public to understand who is trying to influence what.
Yeah, just to add in, the press, the FOIL, the Freedom of Information Law request that often journalists do, but anybody can do. You got to do it by mail still. And you're saying, come on, guys, let's put it up online so we can get the information more quickly. And they haven't done it.
It's true that we have a bill that we hope will pass and the governor will sign that says that when the public wants to appeal a decision by an agency to not provide the requested records, that the public can do that via email instead of snail mail, which is what's required now, and is a little weird and inconsistent, since the public can submit a records request, a FOIL request via email, but they can't appeal if they get a rejection via email. So it's essentially obstruction by the executive agencies who want to make it harder for the public to get their records.
No question. And we hear those stories. One recent story I heard about was in the prison system, which took 9 months just to get the FOIL information. That's just the request.
Yep. I would just close by saying that, I think at this moment in history where you do have this incredibly stark divide between the parties and also, one of the parties careening into authoritarianism, that this is a moment when the Democratic leaders of New York State and the institutions in New York State could really stand up and shine and say, this is what democracy looks like. You know, this is what good government looks like. Call it naive or optimistic, but, we would love to see that rather than, oh, look, we have permission to, instead of, you know, try to being, our best selves as Democrats here, let's instead take advantage of this moment to, be as secretive and partisan as we possibly can.
Yeah, you know, I think there is a bit of hope if you look at New York State history, and New York has taken the lead on so many important issues, from rules surrounding child labor, women's rights. You know, we have been at the forefront. We have been proven to be the Empire State. So maybe as this pendulum swings in the what we might consider the wrong direction, there'll be a pushback in the right direction.
Let's hope.
He is John Caney, Executive Director and co-founder of Reinvent Albany. You can find out more at reinventalbany.org. John, I thank you as always for joining us for this discussion.
Thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.